As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Tom Butler.
I'm Brendan Duffy.
And I'm Tom Wheatley.
And you're listening to the James Bond A to Z podcast.
Join us on this journey of discovery across the world of the 007 movies.
As we take an encyclopedic look at cinema's greatest spy films.
We'll learn about the people who made them in front of the camera and behind.
From Ken Adam to Max Zorin, with the occasional detour down a few rabbit holes. And we'll sometimes be joined by guests with unique insight into the world of Bond.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the James Bond brand, Eon, or the Fleming Estate. We do our best to make sure the information is accurate, but sometimes we do get it wrong. If you want to correct us on something or add some more detail, email us on podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoy the show. If you want to support the podcast, we have a coffee page at ko-fi.com/JamesBondAtoZ, and you can find the link in the show notes. Hello and welcome to the James Bond A to Z podcast, where M is for, well, it's not really for anything this time.
Mailbag.
Mailbag. Okay, we're going to go with that. We're going a bit off script this time. We are going to answer some of your questions that you've sent in. We're going to discuss a few different things about the James Bond world. So it's a little bit different from our usual episodes. But as always, my name is Tom Butler, and joining me, as we delve into the mailbag of joy, it's Mr. Brendan Duffy.
Hello.
And I haven't got anything witty to say about him, but...
say the mailbag of joy again, because that was a really normal thing to say.
And delving into his own ball bag, it's Mr. Tom Wheatley.
Oh, fantastic. Really upping the tone. Very nice.
Indeed. So, yeah, we asked our followers on Instagram, Twitter, what have you, for some questions for the podcast, because frankly we need a bit of a break from all the hardcore researching that we've been doing, and it just gives us an opportunity just to have a general chat about James Bond, which we don't often get to do. So we've got lots of questions in, and we will go through them. We've got some shout outs to go through, and most excitingly, we're going to be re-ranking the 12 James Bond films that we've covered so far, which is going to be exciting.
It'll get a lot of people off my back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we dive into the mailbag, I thought we could just have a quick chat. James Bond is back. He's back in the cinemas. Mm. Have you been enjoying that?
Yeah, I've been struggling to watch them all. It's a bit annoying that the time it's on. But yeah, I've seen two of them now.
I think, yeah, that's probably fair to mention, actually, that the Bond films are back in UK and Ireland cinemas, but the way that they've been done, they've made it very difficult for people to find them. Not every cinema's showing them. A lot of the cinemas that are showing them are only showing them at one time on one evening. Mine randomly happened on Monday and Tuesday evenings. Yeah. Whereas Brendan, yours seems to be the opposite, but the opposite, Tuesday or Monday.
Yeah. Which is great, isn't it, for trying to record the podcast as well.
Yeah, so you like to record early in the week. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, poor us, because I know in North America and Canada, Australia, they don't have these the re-release going on, so we shouldn't feel too sorry for ourselves. But have the audiences been when you've been?
Small. there's normally about six people in there with me, but they are very excited.
Yeah, mine depends on the film that it is. You can definitely tell the more popular films. Like Goldfinger. Also, the cinema seemed to be quite savvy on what screen to put it in, because Goldfinger, they put it in a bigger screen. And it was warranted because it had more people in it.
Mm. I know that's had the biggest box office so far of the re-releases. And I wonder how it will pan out over the whole course, because 25 films, it will be peaks and troughs, right? I think...
Yeah, I kind of thought that the Connery ones would be fairly popular. I have a feeling that Roger Moore ones are going to drop a bit, some of those ones. But when you get to the Brosnan ones, I think that's going to be when they start getting really busy.
I reckon they'll be the ones where they really peak, won't they, because of the era. I noticed that when I've been to see them, they've been generally an older crowd. Mm-hmm. And that's probably just sort of because of, the age of the movies, I guess. They're not going to attract the young'uns to those ones. But I've really enjoyed them. It's a bit, some of them I've seen on the big screen before, some of them not.
I think it's a bit, it's not worked out well, because obviously Amazon has got all of them about the same time. So if they'd done the films maybe six, and obviously it's an anniversary, so they can't do that. But if there was a bit of a gap, like a six-month gap, and the cinema ones came out first, I'd have gone, most people would have probably gone to see a lot more of them. But... you know, if you're busy or something, you go, well, I'll just watch it on Amazon after this, because it's on there. So, yeah, I think it's a bit of bad timing around it for access to the films.
Yeah, it was weird, wasn't it? Like, they came to Amazon and then they were announced for the cinema. So, but I mean, I will always urge people to go see them on the big screen, because they're made for the movies, right? And some of the stuff just translates better.
Yeah, you really spot some of the things that we talk about in the films a lot more easily on the big screen. Like, you know, when you see the tattoos, or Connery's tattoos, or you're talking about stuntmen, it's so much more obvious when you're watching it on modern day big screens, which is, it's an interesting way to view it.
Yeah. Also recently watched You Only Live Twice, and the cat going absolutely crazy arms. It's so obvious.
So we've only ever seen that on the small screen, so yeah.
Also, the line in Thunderball, which I've never really caught before, but it's Connery when he comes out in Shrublands and he says, "Catch you later, irrigator." Which I've never really noticed before. I didn't notice that it was a pun. It's quite funny. Yeah. But there are lines in there that I haven't caught before, or like they play better with an audience than they do at home, definitely.
Yeah. It's really satisfying to hear where the laughs are as well, with an audience. I just think it's a great way of seeing them from a different perspective, and it's given me newfound love for certain films, and you know, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Well, there's many more to come.
Many more. Which ones are you most looking forward to seeing on the big screen?
The GoldenEye, definitely.
Well, we knew that.
And The Spy Who Loved Me, I think that would be great. What about you?
I quite like to see Live and Let Die.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
I think that's going to be a really nice one to watch. And then maybe... can't think of another. Maybe, I don't know, I've seen Moonraker at the cinema before. I think probably the Brosnan ones for me, because I've got memories of being at the cinema of those. So there's a bit of a different angle of memories coming back from those. Yeah. Can't wait for Die Another Day, actually.
Yeah.
I'm going to go in at about six pints deep.
I'm really looking forward to seeing all of the Roger ones, to be honest. Man with the Golden Gun, I'm intrigued to see. I know that's quite a technical movie, so I'm intrigued to see that one on the big screen. And also ones that I'm not that taken with, like Living Daylights, Few Eyes Only. I'm interested to see those and how they play on the big screen, whether they're sort of something that's lost in translation. So, I'm looking forward to seeing all of them now.
I'm just hoping that they... because at the moment, the cinema, I think it's the same for all of us, they're sort of showing them at 7:50 on a... Monday or Tuesday night, and it's not too bad at the moment because they're sort of 2 hours long, but when you get to some of the really long ones, that's going to be a struggle, I think, for getting up early in the morning.
Let's open the mailbag and answer a question. Right, this one's from Nikolai Quack, friend of the show. He wants to know, what is our favourite James Bond movie poster? quite an easy one to set us off with, I reckon. Mm. Brendan?
Yeah. GoldenEye.
No, I'm not going to say GoldenEye.
Any answer, GoldenEye.
It's not easy.
There you go.
There's some really good hand-drawn ones.
I reckon me and Butler's are going to be pretty similar.
Right. I'm going to give you a handful here. So I really love the Living Daylights poster. That's like the last hand-drawn one, I think. The one with the gun barrel. It's just a classic look for a Bond poster, and I think it really nails all the elements on there. And then other than that, obviously, For Your Eyes Only. I'm a big fan of that poster. The legs.
Iconic, that one.
The iconic legs. Yeah. And I also love the teaser for License to Kill. You know, his bad side is a dangerous place to be. Or his dangerous side is bad. I can't remember which way around it is. But it's just the black, him all in black with the gun. And that just to me is classic. So that's a handful. But also really love all the posters for From Russia With Love, I think, are beautiful. Like, just classic.
Yeah, fantastic.
Classic. Oh,
so you're not going for No Time to Die with people just stood against a blue background? Thought that'd be you're a big fan of blue backgrounds, aren't you?
Or the Spectre one where it's just a man with a skull face. Yeah,
yeah, that'll do. Yeah, that's perfect.
I don't want to talk about
Quantum of Solace with him just on lying down with a gun.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's Skyfall, isn't it?
Skyfall. Yes, that's Skyfall.
Obviously, it's the Tanner character poster from No Time to Die. So let's just end it there. Yeah.
Okay, so you're locking that in. That's
I'm
yours.
Locking that
okay.
Yeah, Brendan.
Do you know what? And I can't believe you've not said it yet. The Live and Let Die one, I think, is excellent.
Yeah.
With the cards and the little voodoo bond, which I only noticed when we did that episode, actually, the detail of the little voodoo bond. I think that's fantastic. Yeah, hand-drawn again.
My only issue with that one is that they basically copied it for The Man with the Golden Gun. And so it's a little bit diluted in a way. I like the ones that you don't see again. But
I think there's different ways you can look at it, isn't it? So from a sort of artistic perspective, and definitely from our era, we've got this sort of retro design thing where we really like that style. I was going to go for Live and Let Die. And Man with Golden Gun, because I like the style of both of those, because they are very similar. But I also, because I like that, I like the 80s, I like that design anyway. It's a really popular design in the 80s. But also, Goldfinger for me, I think, that was the only poster I've ever owned and like stuck up on my wall, I think.
The Brown John one.
Yeah. The black one with the sort of few images on it.
Yeah.
But it's a very different design altogether. It's of its time, isn't it? And it probably wouldn't have worked in the 70s and 80s, but I definitely think the ones from Live and Let Die, Man with Golden Gun are the most artistic. I think that the most effort has gone into them. They're really nice.
Yeah, I mean, the first Bond poster I ever bought, and I have framed still behind me, is the On Her Majesty's Secret Service. I think that's a terrific poster. It's very out there. It sort of follows in the theme of the one for You Only Live Twice, you know, where he's walking around the rim of the volcano.
Oh, yeah.
It's very different.
I love Lazenby's stance on that.
Yeah.
The way he's holding the gun on the skis.
Completely unnatural, isn't it?
Yeah. Nobody's gone for the ice ones in Die Another Day.
Oh, that Die Another Day teaser poster, though. Oh, yes.
With the gun.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
That is good. Actually, I would say that the teaser posters for the Brosnan era were better generally than the main posters.
Which was it was an awful one of Halle Berry and Pierce Brosnan, wasn't it? Both shooting guns like it was a Nicolas Cage film.
Yeah. And they've got good Japanese posters for Die Another Day. That's I think
the Japanese
best.
Posters are if we're picking regional based ones, the Japanese ones always win for me.
Yeah, I mean, there's loads. It was a good question, Nikolai. Loads there to choose from.
We'll do a whole episode on it soon.
Well, I probably will do when we get to P for posters. But yeah, I mean, obviously, if people want to email in their suggestions as well, their favourite posters, then they can get us on podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk. Send them in. Tweet us as well.
Stick them on Instagram as well, the most popular ones.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Yes. All right, let's move on to the next question. This is from our friend George at Cinema Savvy. He wants to know, he's going to ask about the viewing order of the films. So obviously you're going to watch them in chronological order, but not always suitable. So he says, if you can pick three films to show someone seeing James Bond for the first time, what three do you go for? And he's given us three different scenarios. Right, so the first one is a child under 10.
This is good because we've actually discussed this before, but only in one instance, which would be somebody who's never seen it. How do you kind of get them into Bond?
Yeah.
So this is a good angle for it. A child under 10. You only live twice.
Yeah, agreed.
GoldenEye, Brendan, for you?
I'm not having this all episode. I'm not... It's You Only Live Twice or Spy Who Loved Me, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, I'm going to go for the whole Lewis Gilbert trilogy. You Only Live Twice, Spy Who Loved Me, Moonraker. I think those three are the perfect introductions to Bond for someone of a younger disposition, because they're just so much fun. There's so much there to, you know, get you excited. There's little Nelly, there's the volcano, you've got Spy Who Loved Me, you've got Jaws, you've got the parachute jump, you've got loads of great gadgets, you've got obviously got the amazing car in that one.
Well, you've got kids, so yes. would they be the three that, you know, you would go for?
Probably. I mean, as you both know, I was watching Moonraker after my birthday when I was hungover, and the kids were asleep on the sofa because we'd had a party, and they woke up and I was watching Moonraker, and they were quite taken with it until it got too scary for them. And
what was the scary bit? The space outfits?
No, it was Jaws on the cable car. They just found him too terrifying, which I can understand. I mean, they're only 6 and 3. So.
Is the pigeon double take in Moonraker?
That's in Venice, isn't it?
Yeah, when he's on the gondola.
Yeah, actually, you know, the bit they loved was the bit with the ninja in the glassworks in Moonraker. They just thought that was hilarious. Chang, is it Chang? His name?
Yeah,
and he's got the suit on, the boot. I don't even know what you say, but it's got like a ninja outfit on, and then he's attacking him with the big stick. They just thought that was hilarious. All right, next scenario. Are we locked in on those three?
Oh yeah,
I think so. Yeah,
I mean, worth saying, you probably couldn't show any of the Daniel Craig films to an under 10-year-old.
Well, one because they'd be scared, too, because they wouldn't have a clue what was going on.
No.
Yeah, and you'd have to start Casino Royale because of the arc.
Yeah. All right, so significant other half.
That's a good question, because I've been trying to do this.
So you need tips.
I need tips. I think it's largely dependent on...
Their tastes.
Their taste, but also, like, you know, if you ask this to a, you know, 20-year-old couple, that might be different. But certainly, I think for me, my girlfriend, it's Daniel Craig era stuff. I'd just show her that, just... It's too hard to get her to sort of grasp what the other films are about, or what you can't really, like, for sure. Roger Moore one, she would be like, is this comedy?
It's a bigger hurdle, isn't it, to get
it's
over?
It's a bigger hurdle. I actually took her to see From Russia with Love, and she didn't mind it, but I think she just wasn't really, like, she didn't really get it in the context that where it was in the Bond series. So I definitely just show them Craig, and then if they like that, you've got a starting point.
I'd go with Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
Interesting.
Because it's not really like a Bond film, in a way. It's got more to it than just your average Bond film.
Yeah, I suppose the other part of that question is also, does your significant other like older films and things like that? Because in that sense, you probably... It's just a nice, good old film, isn't it? But if they're not into old films, you can't really show them those ones, because it's... bit of a leap.
I would agree with the Daniel Craig thing, because they are a better, easier entry point for someone who's not familiar with the series, definitely.
Yeah. Or Piers. I reckon you can still get away with Piers, because they're just sort of fun 90s films, aren't they, if you don't really understand the context.
Yeah, I think so. But if we're going to go classic, I don't think you can go wrong again with The Spy Who Loved Me, because that's just so much fun. I think that's just such a good entry point for anyone, really.
I don't think I'd show Roger any of the Roger films to somebody who didn't know what Bond was or wasn't really into it, never seen it before, just because he is such a difficult one to sort of grasp at the point of time we're at now.
I guess so, yeah. There is a lot of context you've got to consider, but I don't know, he's probably the entry point for most people. For most people who are fans now, he was the entry point, right?
He was, yeah.
Yeah, so why couldn't he still be the entry point, I think?
We can go A View to a Kill.
Yeah.
It's got a bit, it's got something for everyone. Bit of quiche.
Bit of Grace Jones.
Bit of Grace Jones. I mean, you really can't dislike that film. That's that. Yeah, the perfect entry point is View to Kill.
What about some of the early ones? What, like Dr. No would be a good, wouldn't that be a good entry point?
I think Dr. No is, I think Dr. No, it, you need to understand the Bond, where it comes in the Bond thing and why it's important. Because on its own, if that film was a film on its own and no other Bond films existed and you've never seen any, it's not a particularly...
It's not refined, is it?
It's not refined. There's not a lot of depth to it. And by the end of it, you're just like, yeah, it's all right, probably. But when we watch it, we can see how that generated the following films and what they learned from it. But I think if that was a standalone film, it wouldn't be a very strong film.
Yeah, and I think the problem with Goldfinger, with Goldfinger is the sexual politics make it a difficult one, I think, to try and bring someone into the series. Ditto with Thunderball, right?
Because
you're going to get yourself cancelled.
Exactly. But if your significant other is really into underwater, go Thunderball.
Oh boy. And the final scenario is an adult looking to get into them. So I guess this is like your mate who's never watched a James Bond film before. Where do you start them off?
Yeah. Again, it's a similar thing with...
The partner.
Well, yeah. If they're like us, you could probably show them an older one and they'll go, that's a really good film. But if they're not into old films, I'd go Casino Royale. It's just a safe bet, isn't it? It's a good film.
I think you can go earlier than that.
Yeah.
And you're not going to like my answer.
Is it GoldenEye?
It's GoldenEye, yeah.
I was going to say exactly the same thing, actually.
Yeah.
I think GoldenEye is a great entry point for the series because it's just such a light, fast-moving film, isn't it?
Mm.
And it's fun, it's funny, the sexual politics aren't too iffy.
Yeah.
Probably are in places.
Yeah, because he's got comments from M that sort of bring him down to... Yeah. Some form of reality, which helps.
And if you like it, watch Mamma Mia afterwards, and you're sorted.
Yeah, or Mamma Mia can be your entry point, and then you can
move on. See what he did before he retired to a Greek island.
Yeah, I want to get my friend into Bond. How do I start? Show Mamma Mia. The strangest. Yeah, I mean, that'd be good. I'd like to see that test work. So how did you get into it? Well, I watched Mamma Mia and Mamma Mia 2, and then I was hooked.
All right, let's move on. This is from Paul Planchich. He wants to know, can you tell us what your favourite informational or biography Bond book is? So I guess he's aware that we do a lot of research in the books. So, what are your favourites or what do you like to turn to?
It's really hard. There's so many good ones. A reliable one is The Legacy.
Yes.
John Cork and Bruce Scively. That's the one that is it's official. You know, the archives have been well and truly looked into, and it's got like a story to it through the ages.
It adds a lot of context, doesn't it, for each era of Bond in terms of what was going on in the real world and how that affected James Bond. So yeah, it's a great shout, but it's an absolutely ginormous book.
Yeah, if they could just make it a bit smaller, so you can not have to sort of move your sofa out the way and put all the furniture to the side to open it, and that would help.
But great shout on it being an official one. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. And it's so in-depth as well, isn't it? And it also covers Casino Royale and Never Say Never Again, which is unusual, I think, for an official book.
Yeah. Because it covers everything. It covers that the McClory story and everything.
Yeah, well, it's beautifully put into sort of a long story. So you can follow it and always read it like a... Not a novel, but there's a start and a middle and an end to it, and you can see the whole journey, which isn't often the case with Bond books. They tend to be more, you know, sort of encyclopedic. So it's it's nice from that perspective, and you get all the nice pictures. So you really, it's a great entry point, really, for if you go, well, I really want to learn the whole thing, read that. You probably know quite a lot about the whole journey, and you can delve into other things a bit more, whereas the other ones, they're a little bit drier, aren't they? And you really have to know what you're looking for.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would say about that one is The Legacy only goes up to the Pierce Brosnan era. So anything Daniel Craig related, it's out. It's not there. But it would be great if they updated it for the 60th. I can't see it happening, but would be great. I mean, the two obviously that often we refer to as well, Some Kind of Hero by Matthew Field and AJ Chowdhury, which is just a really in-depth the story of how each film was made, and also a lot of the other stuff, how the books became optioned to be made movies, the films that didn't get made, why Harry and Cubby fell out, all that sort of stuff. It's like a good biography of the Bond films, meticulously
great
researched.
Quotes as well.
Yeah, great quotes. Mm. And then the other one is the Nobody Does It Better by Mark Altman and Edward Cross. Sorry, I'm just looking at the that's an oral history of the James Bond films. So that's got loads of really good quotes from loads of really interesting people. The only thing it doesn't quite have is the narrative art structure, which makes sometimes finding what you're looking for a little bit tricky.
I'd say Nobody Does It Better. That's my favourite one.
Yeah.
Because I've got that on as an audiobook, and it's quite what I like about it is that it goes through every part of the Bond series in quite big chapters, and they take references. There's lots of different quotes from lots of different people associated with Bond, quite a lot of people that aren't really associated with Bond and they're just fans of Bond. But what I like is it's quite varied. Like some of the chapters, like there'll be a chapter about Casino Royale 67 that's very much focused on one area of the production. And then you read another one, it's very much focused on like Tim Dalton or something like that. So it's not just a prescribed, this is what happened, this is this. They've sort of taken angles on each bit of it. So you tend to find something new and interesting out every time. And I love listening to it. It's like every chapter is about an hour long. So it's a good little, if you're a runner or you walk for an hour, then it's sort of, you can listen to the whole thing in one nice package.
Yeah, I guess some other mentions, I would say that it's an older book, but The Incredible World of 007 by Lee Pfeiffer and Philip Leeser, that's really good. One of the early sort of full stories of James Bond type books. It's got some really great weird sections at the back, like bloopers and interviews with cast and all sorts of stuff. So that's really worth seeking out.
Well, of course, Bond on Bond.
Yes.
You probably put that in there.
Any of the Roger Moore books, really, because he is the only Bond to have written about Bond at this stage. Yeah. So they're good. I've also read a really good book recently called Goldeneye by Matthew Parker, which is about Ian Fleming and Jamaica. It's not really about Bond, but more about the history of Jamaica told through the lens of Ian Fleming there, which was a really interesting book. If you ever read the MI6 Confidential magazines, they're always really good detailed, got good stuff in there. And then also there's a few official making of books for the films. Goldeneye, I'm thinking of. License to Kill. I think there is one for Tomorrow Never Dies and The World Is Not Enough, but we haven't got there yet, so I haven't got them. But they're always really good because they're, again, official accounts and a bit more detailed. So, yeah, that's a lot of answers there.
It is, yeah.
Right, let's go back to the movies. Nikolai, another question from him. What are your guys' favourite third act / climaxes to Bond films?
Well, I tell you what, the other day I went to see You Only Live Twice, seeing that on the big screen, that climax, it's so huge.
Mm.
It's impressive. Mm. I thought it's excellent. You know, it doesn't, there's a few Bond films that don't live up to to what's preceded. You know, the first two acts are like, the whole chase is really exciting, and the third act falls flat a little.
Mm.
But You Only Live Twice, it does not let up.
No, it really doesn't. It's very loud as well. Really good to hear in the cinema. Very explosive finale. Yep. I'm going to go in there with License to Kill. I love the ending of License to Kill. I love that stunt sequence. I think it's really well,
that's great.
Really well put together. Really memorable. It feels tangible, right? It feels gritty. Feels real. So I'd say that. And also Goldeneye as well. I really love the ending of Goldeneye. How that all comes together.
Also Skyfall.
Yeah.
I think the attack on Skyfall is fantastic.
Coffee? Medium sweet. Two medium sweet.
Thanks for listening. We hope you're enjoying the James Bond A to Z podcast. Remember, if you want to support the show, we have a coffee page at ko-fi.com. patreon.com/JamesBond A to Z, where you can buy us a coffee for just £3 or for £3 a month. Thanks for listening. Back to the show.
What's the matter?
I don't feel so good. I feel so sleepy.
Damn coffee.
Is that all it does?
Here we go. Here's an interesting question. This one is from @KidCreole3, aka Daddy-O. In your research for the A to Z, have there been people whose story has surprised you or touched you unexpectedly?
I would say Johnny Jordan's story was quite unexpected, because obviously that's part of why we do this, to find out stories that we didn't know and how the shots were gotten, stuff like that.
Reminders.
And Johnny Jordan was the aerial photographer. He was the one who got some of those incredible shots on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
And you only live twice.
And unfortunately, I can't remember which film it was, but he got killed, didn't he, on the set of another film, not a Bond film.
He lost a leg on You Only Live Twice and then died while making another film.
Mm. And that was quite a surprising story, to see the sort of risks he was taking, and then it's quite sad how it ended, really.
You also had, quite early in the podcast, had a good one with Pedro Almendarez, which was a story I wasn't aware of before we sort of dived into researching it. And his story was obviously very, very sad.
Yeah.
Terminally ill on the set of From Russia With Love. But yeah, he obviously then they had to finish shooting his scenes early, and and then left and killed himself in hospital.
Mm.
Johnny Jordan died while filming Catch 22.
That's it.
Okay.
I think the thing about Pedro Almendarez is that it's not so much that he was ill and you know, passed away afterwards. It was that you just can't imagine it from in the film. He's just so good in it, and so lively and
charismatic.
It was surprising to go, no way, that can't be. Mm. Well, we're talking about the same person. So fantastic motivation and effort in that, and he really does. He is fantastic in that film. I think there's other ones as well. I think there's people that not so much. I think people like Almendarez is really surprising. But then there's people like Richard Kiel, who, if you didn't know much about him, you probably would assume that he was just sort of, you know, big guy, plays the big guy in films, and that's it really. But he was a smart guy. He was really, really smart. Mm-hmm. And he also did loads for charity and things like that. So there's a lot of altruistic people that we've learnt about by doing the podcast that you probably didn't expect, but you just didn't know about that kind of side of them. But I think there's a lot of those in the Bond world that do that.
Yeah.
There was also Ilse Stepat as well, who sadly died not long after making On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Oh, yes.
Which, again, didn't know that. That was very, very sad that she died. And they were planning to bring her back, weren't they, for Diamonds Are Forever, but had to be, completely changed after that. Another one I thought was quite an interesting one to research was Caroline Cossey, who is obviously in For Your Eyes Only, the transgender Bond girl. Which was just a fascinating story to learn about, and quite an inspiring one, I thought, that she was able to take, this tough story that she had been dealt and turn it into something quite positive. So that was quite a good one.
Yeah. But that's the great thing about it. You know, we find out about all these people that do such amazing work outside of Bond, you know, and have incredible stories.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? Mm. That's what we're learning about, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is a good one. This is from Luke Payne. Luke's been one of our supporters on a coffee and on Twitter. In fact, let's give a shout out to our coffee supporters, Luke, Guillaume, Adrian, John, Carwin, David, Jack, all contributed. So, yeah, thanks a million for that. That's been great to get that support. But Luke, he messaged and said, if Ian Fleming had retained the rights to Casino Royale, how do you think Casino Royale might have worked with Connery? And do you think it would have changed the series much? It's a good hypothetical.
Oh, it is. The multiverse.
I think it would have been good. I think he would have been fantastic in it. And you kind of look at him in some of the casino scenes that he's done, and you can see that I think it would have worked really well.
My only concern is they would have made it first and would have heavily relied on a soundstage, so we wouldn't have got that view of Jamaica,
yeah,
which is part of the charm of Bond.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether we would have lost that, and it would just have turned out to be another 60s film. You know?
Yeah, that's true. And there's probably an element of it where the new Casino Royale, they basically really tried to make it like the book. They went back to Fleming and they tried to, obviously they modernized it and everything, but they really wanted to hit it hard. Whereas what they might have done with the original version is sort of soup it up, move it to a different location, add in a load of action scenes and stuff. So there was a risk of that.
Yeah. I guess that if you remember back when we did Casino Royale 67, the producers on that, they tried to sue, I think, Harry and Cubby, because they'd lifted so many elements from what they thought was the Casino Royale story and put them into Bond anyway. So you feel like the DNA of Casino Royale is in the Bond films anyway, right up until the point that they made the official Casino Royale. So, yeah, I don't think it would have changed too much, but I'm glad that we got it at the point that we did. You know, that 2006 Casino Royale was a great way to reboot the series at that point.
Yeah.
And if we hadn't had that, what would it have been? You know, they'd been going on a very weird trajectory, hadn't they, with... from GoldenEye to Tomorrow Never Dies to The World Is Not Enough to Die Another Day. They were getting sort of, you know, these labyrinthine high-tech plots, lots of like just very ornate, like weird plotting stories and stuff like that. And I think the fact that they went back to Casino Royale helped them get back on course with just telling a great story. Interesting hypothetical there. Another one here. Right, let's listen to this one. This is from Jack Cross. He said, which Bond actor was most wasted as a villain and which actor made the most of their opportunity? I think he's just talking about the villains here.
I would say the one who most wasted their opportunity.
Yeah.
So that's a tough one because a lot of the time it's not the actor's fault. It's the dodgy scripting.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, that's really tough.
I'll jump in. I've got a good one for you. Christoph Waltz as Blofeld. Christoph Waltz, I think, is a terrific actor, but I think he makes very limited impact as Blofeld, to be honest. I would have liked to have seen him be an original villain of his own making. You know, he was great as Hans Lander in Glorious Bastards, and I just think that was a huge missed opportunity. To make an interesting Blofeld or an interesting another villain. I think he would have been better as another villain, to be honest. So there's mine.
I think Safin was pretty useless.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think he had a motive. I think you've got an actor who we know is capable of great things, you know, if you look at his career.
Yeah.
What about ones that made the most of it? I'm going to say Yaphet Kotto.
Oh, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mr. Big in Live and Let Die.
Telly Savalas.
Yes.
I think he has so much fun with that role.
Yeah, you can have that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going through my head, keep thinking, what about that one? And then I think, actually, no, that was pretty bad.
Gert Frobe as Goldfinger.
Gert Frobe was, yeah. Dr. No, I was kind of thinking when we were talking about the one that didn't make the best of it, and I think Dr. No was fantastic, but I think he also was wasted a bit. They didn't really use him as much as they could because he's very good in the scenes he's in, but he's also quite limited in those scenes. It's sort of his role in that film ends very abruptly, and you don't get the best of him.
That's reflective of the book, though. It's quite a faithful adaptation of the book. Dr. No doesn't come in until very, very late in the story.
Well, in the other sense, he's very good.
Yes.
So he does make the best of the role.
Yeah. Sean Bean, I think, really makes a good fist of playing 006 Alec Trevelyan. GoldenEye again.
I'm not allowed to talk about GoldenEye, so I won't mention anything.
That's what people listen to the podcast hear you talking about GoldenEye. Elliot Carver,
Christopher Lee.
I mean, Mads Mikkelsen.
Yes,
I think I might put Mads Mikkelsen as the top, to be honest.
Yeah, as the best.
As the best for me.
Not Mr. Kill.
Not
Mr. Most wasted villain. He should have been the main villain.
I just think he's so terrifying, but the way he plays it, it's not like an obvious terrifying like a lot of the Bond villains. So yeah, understated. Yeah.
Right, I've got another good one from Nikolai here. What kind of action sequence hasn't been done before would you like to see? I'm going to dive in here because I heard something. We did for the website I work for, we did an interview with Chris Corbold, and he was asked what's the action sequence or the vehicle that he's never had, got to use before and would like to put in a James Bond film. And he said a Formula One car. And it's got me thinking about like James Bond at the races and some sort of racing sequence.
Like in Our Majesty's Secret Service?
Sorry?
Like in Our Majesty's Secret Service? Yeah.
Yes. Like in Dying of the Day on the ice?
Yes.
So they've done it.
But, I mean, that's a bit of a joke one, isn't it? But like, I know that Fleming was very much into his motorsports. There's obviously that scene in Iron Man 2 where they're at the Formula One. I can see it. I can see Bond infiltrating some sort of racing team, and
You kind of want him to infiltrate a racing team and then come off the track and end up racing around the streets in a car going past normal cars.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that's sort of what would be one thing I'd quite like to see.
What about in the Tour de France on a bike?
cycling chase.
So yeah, he's not
running a long distance running race.
I'd also like to see is I'd like to see the jetpack from Thunderball come back and be used in a meaningful way, because it's really not used in an interesting way in Thunderball.
Well, he escapes.
Yeah, and that's it. Yeah. But I think there is something there. Like, there's a lot of use of jetpacks now in Mountain Rescue, so there is like a human like use case for it now.
Yeah.
So that's what I'd like to see.
Yeah, everything else has been done, hasn't it? You have a hot air balloon, done.
Yeah. Mm.
Space, done. Underwater, done.
Yeah, you've got to be specific, haven't you? Because it's got to be like a specific vehicle that hasn't...
Kite surfing, he's done that.
Yeah, he has. He's done that unnecessarily so. Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it?
And Segways aren't really in fashion anymore, so...
That would be fantastic.
A Segway chase, yeah. Anyway, that's a good one to think about, and that's another one for people to email in.
Skateboards.
Also, I always bang on about this, but taking James Bond to Australia, I think that's something we need to do, because he's never been there. So let's take him somewhere new and give him something to do there. Something on the Sydney Opera House.
That'd be the action sequence, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
With an opera going on at the same time.
Yes, of course, to give it that, composer David Arnold.
Yeah.
We've got it sorted. Yeah. Sold.
Okay, just a couple more questions to get through. This is another one from Luke. He's back on his hypotheticals. He wants to know what are our favourite 007 mysteries and hypotheticals to ponder. For example, if Lazenby had made a second film, if Dalton had made a third one, if Brosnan had made a fifth, or if he'd started with The Living Daylights, what are the ones that you like to ponder?
Well, we've done the Dalton third film to death. So I'm going to go with, what if Roger Moore had played Bond from the beginning?
Oh, yes.
Ooh, wow. What? and it from the 1960s, he'd started playing?
Yeah, from Dr. No. Yeah. There's a what if. Jump in the what if machine. It'd have ended in 1963, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be a... Oh, blimey. I can't imagine him in those.
Well, Connery, if he'd stayed on and done all the Bond films up to 1983, because his last one was 1983, wasn't it? With Never Say Never Again. Mm. So,
yeah.
That's an interesting one. I always like to think about what would On Her Majesty's Secret Service have been like with Sean Connery.
Better.
That's one I like to ponder. Better.
Even better than it already is.
Then I wonder whether or not they all just were upping their game because of it being a new Bond.
Right, because they had a point to prove.
Yeah, and the music's amazing, the sound, the set design's amazing, the editing, the directing, all that sort of stuff is just extra special, I think, in that film. So
there's a sort of neat, you know, it stands on its own, which is nice about On a Magic Secret Service. You can kind of view it separately than the other ones, whereas if it was Connery, it might have fallen into the downward spiral of Connery, and it might not have been as good.
Yeah. Another fun hypothetical I like to think about is whether McClory had a third chance to do Thunderball with Dalton or with Brosnan in the 90s, what that would have been like. Awful. I'm just going to put it out there. Would have been awful.
Well, underwater. A lot more underwater scenes.
Another hypothetical in terms of the creatives, Martin Campbell to have directed all the 90s Bonds.
Oh, that's a good one.
Mm.
That would be very interesting.
Yeah, that would be very interesting indeed. Yeah.
Or if Steven Spielberg had made For Your Eyes Only.
Like he wanted to. Yeah.
Like he wanted to.
What about if there weren't loads of writer strikes during Quantum of Solace?
It's a tantalising what if, isn't it? What could that film have been?
Yeah.
It's what it should have been, really. It was quite unfair what happened to it.
Yeah.
Because riding on the high of Casino Royale. Yeah.
Mm.
Okay. Any more to mention?
One more. What if the Bourne series hadn't have been a success?
Ooh.
Where would Bond have gone?
Yeah.
Because it's
Fast and Furious. Just loads of cars.
It takes so many cues from those films.
It does, but then also, what about if the 9/11 effect can't be ignored either, right? I think at that time,
yeah.
I think that obviously helped steer things in a different direction. But the impact of Jason Bourne cannot be denied.
Mm.
Final question. I've got a few more bits and bobs to go through, but
I know what the final question is going to be, and I don't want to answer it.
All right, but I'll save it for a little bit longer then. I've got some emails here, though, from other people. These have just come in over time. First of all, I just want to give a shout out to a guy called David Shoebridge, who's been a new listener to the show and has messaged us on Instagram recently saying some very nice things. So thank you, David. I hope you're enjoying the show still. Email here from a gentleman called James Rawls, and he emailed to let us know about his website, Comics Royale. Now, this is one that I believe... Alan told us about from the James Bond lexicon. So Comics Royale, James basically takes foreign language, often unofficial James Bond comics, and translates them into English for the first time. I've had a look. It's absolutely terrific. So if you want to check that out, it's comicsroyale.com.
He's taken a lot of work there.
Yeah, he really has. Also, an email here from Val Pacheco, a new listener to the podcast. Absolutely loving it. Thank you very much. He says, Wheatley, you're very wrong. License to Kill is certainly not lower than Live and Let Die.
Well, I've actually put it even lower on the new ranking. So
you're even wronger?
Yeah.
Apparently so.
He also got a bit of an issue. I mean, you covered Phil Mayhew on the podcast recently. Was that your section?
That was Brendan, I think.
No, it wasn't. It was you,
Brendan.
Was it me?
Yeah.
What he said that you completely failed to mention The Long Good Friday and The Fourth Protocol.
Oh, filmography. No, I saw this email. Yeah, no, I... Yeah, sorry. one of the main reasons is that I get told off by these two for mentioning too much stuff. So I have to handpick some bits.
Then you leave stuff out.
Yeah.
But obviously, Long Good Friday is one of the greatest British gangster films ever made and has Pierce Brosnan in it. And also The Fourth Protocol is another Bond Brosnan film, which shows a bit of a different side to Pierce Brosnan. So, anyway, he does say rant over, keep up the good work. So thanks a lot, Val. Kimberly, last, she says that she just wanted to know how much she's enjoying the podcast. And she... wants to nitpick to say that we sort of dismissed how big a deal Remington Steele was when we were talking about Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, well, I saw this email as well, and we just didn't know. Like in the UK, it's so hard to see how, like, sort of convey that popularity because it just wasn't big at all over here. And we, I, you know, we, no matter how much stuff you read about it over in the States. It's very difficult to imagine how big it was. But yeah, I completely understand.
Yeah, she said he built an amazing amount of goodwill on TV every week. But yeah, I would honestly say I think that's just something that we weren't. It's a UK English thing, I think. We just didn't have it as big here.
Yeah, we talk about a lot of these programs, and there's many of them that we just don't know hardly anything about, and it's very difficult to see how popular they were. But yeah, Remington Steel, we need a Remington Steel night, don't we? Watch a few episodes and get into it.
I mean, at that time in the 80s, the country was watching Only Fools and Horses by the millions.
So. Yeah, it's a different vibe. Yeah. Very different vibe.
And then I had an email from Thomas Flint. Again, he's someone that's written to the podcast before, and he's got a podcast sticker that we sent him. But he was very familiar with the area that New Orleans that Live and Let Die was filmed in. He said that he'd spent on long vacations in New Orleans, and that he said that the boat chase research on the podcast was great, and they drove through the bayous and. He said he stopped the podcast in order to watch all 18 minutes of the chase from Live and Let Die.
Nice.
So,
I will be in New Orleans in a few months. So,
are you really?
Yes, I'm going heading over. I'm going to Chicago, New Orleans, and LA. So, I'm going to try and find a few. Tempted to go to Vegas as well, just to check out some more Bond locations. But New Orleans is the one that I'm most excited about.
I've been there. You'll absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. It's an amazing place. But he did pronounce us on how you pronounce New Orleans, and he says it's New Orleans, so not New Orleans or however it is. But there you go.
We'll send you some of our hometown names, see if you can get them right.
Yeah.
All right, we'll save the final question right until the very last. So keep on thinking on it, Brendan.
Yeah,
you know what it's going to be.
Yeah, I do.
But we did have a message from a guy called Ben Branally on Twitter. He had also been inspired by the podcast to revisit all the Bond films, and he's doing them in alphabetical order. So a man very much after our own heart. And Ben said that his ranking, he'd got through 7 of the films so far, and at the top is From Russia with Love, followed by Casino Royale, Dr. No, For Your Eyes Only, A View to a Kill, Diamonds Are Forever, and Die Another Day. So not too far off where we are with those rankings. However, we have been ranking the Bond films as we've been going along. We've done 12 films so far. And do you want a reminder of what the rankings currently are?
Damn straight.
Right. So the way we've been doing it is basically after each film special... is we've just been saying, is it better than this one? Is it, and whereabouts has it come? And it's been an evolving list. And so the ranking as it stood was Casino Royale 67 at 12, followed by Diamonds Are Forever, 11. Number 10, Die Another Day. Number 9, View to a Kill. Number 8, For Your Eyes Only. Number 7, Live and Let Die. Number 6, License to Kill. Number 5, Casino Royale. Number 4, GoldenEye. Number 3, Dr. No. Number 2, From Russia with Love. Number 1, Goldfinger. And Brendan, you'd been getting complaints.
Oh, it's been relentless. Honestly, the amount of times, like, what are you doing? Why is Dr. No so high? You're going to come to a problem further down the line when we get to Skyfall. Like, yeah, I know it is going to be an issue, but because of the way we're doing it, that's unfortunately how it's ended up, isn't it? So chance to sort of correct
recalibrate.
It?
Yeah. And Wheatley, you've obviously been very vocal in that you just think the whole thing's a load of... rubbish. And also, you weren't here for Live and Let Die, for License to Kill, so you didn't even get to put your two penneth in for that one, did you?
No.
So what we did is individually we've ranked them. So I've done a ranking, Brendan's done a ranking, the other Tom has done a ranking, and I've then put those, given them all scores against them, and have re-ranked them. So are you ready for the brand new James Bond A to Z podcast, 12 alphabetically ordered James Bond films?
It's all I've been thinking about. It's all I've been able to think about.
Well, I will say there's not a huge change. I'm just gonna say that.
Brendan's gonna get more complaints
from the outset. Casino Royale 67 is a hard bot. It's at the bottom. It's gonna stay at the bottom. I think the entire run. That's at number 12. Diamonds Are Forever also remains unchanged at number 11. Die Another Day at number 10, again, remains unchanged, followed by A View to a Kill at number 9, same spot. At number 8, For Your Eyes Only. Now, here is the first change in the ranking. At number 7, License to Kill.
Yes! That's because I'm involved.
That has dropped down a place, Brendan.
He's delighted, isn't he?
Do you know where Wheatley ranked it?
Bottom, probably. Below Consider AR 67.
Third from bottom.
Oh, come on.
So he's completely weighted that one.
Still better than Die Another Day.
So that swapped place with Live and Let Die. So Live and Let Die is now at number 6.
Mm.
But at number 5, tumbling down the rankings, it's Dr. No.
Oh, yeah, this is the one that needed correcting.
Yeah. I think. So that is now, that's dropped 2 places, so that's at number 5.
Yeah.
Pushing up, Casino Royale into 4th position. GoldenEye is now 3rd position. From Russia with Love is 2nd. And Goldfinger, still number 1.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. That sounds good.
So that is it. That's the official recalibration of the rankings. I will update the Letterboxd list for that, and we will keep adding to it. Our next 2 films to add to the list are Never Say Never Again and No Time to Die. So I'll be interested to see where they end up.
What about Moonraker?
Oh, yeah, and Moonraker, obviously.
So 3 films right at the bottom, then. That'll be good.
Yeah. you let your... prejudices show there, Brendan.
You know what it'll be like. He'll watch it and go, I'm surprised. This is my favourite. This is going above GoldenEye.
Don't, because that's a criticism I keep getting.
Yeah, you're a very impulsive man, aren't you?
Mm.
I had a nice night. It's my favourite.
Well, let's wrap things up then. So that was the ranking. I'm sure everyone's absolutely thrilled to learn that. But the question, the ultimate question, it's from Paul Plankich again. And he said, with the announcement of a new Bond actor in the near future, who would each of your number 1 picks be? So who would you like to see as the next James Bond?
Good point to bring up this question, because we've actually been talking about this quite a lot. And I think all of us probably have had a bit of a turnaround on what it could be, really.
Mm.
In what sense? Explain.
Well, I've always worked on the principle, I think it was actually Mark Miller who made me sort of rethink about my approach, because I was always working on the principle that I wanted somebody maybe a little bit more real. So somebody a bit younger, somebody who was believable in the form of a secret agent. I wanted a sort of serious actor to do it who was respectable and would bring an even more, not gritty, but more real version of Bond for the modern day. Mark Miller made me come around, and he was saying, you've had a gritty Bond for a long time. You've had a story arc, you've had an in-depth series. It needs something a bit more fun now. It needs needs to get a bit like the Roger Moore era, you know, a bit more fun to the Bond thing, because you can't keep following up the thing with the same thing. So that's sort of turned me around a bit now to maybe looking at people that I definitely wouldn't have looked at before. So even somebody like Henry Cavill or something like that, where it's actually more like a fun film series of solo films that are just, you know, designed to be fun action and stuff like that. I think that might be a good route for it now.
I did not expect you to be the one to say that. I thought I was going to come out with that, and you were going to shoot me down into flames. So I'm glad that you have said it first, because I agree. You know, I think not only does the Bond franchise need it, but the world needs it right now. I mean, it's
for the longevity of the series, isn't it? It's, you know, if you keep going down the route that it alienates some people,
mm-hmm.
the Bond series may not succeed. You need to constantly modify it so that, you know, more people watch it, and then you go back to the more in-depth, you know, like more gritty stuff, because then people are engaged. But if you keep doing the gritty stuff and less people watch it, it's not gonna keep going.
Yeah, I think Jamie Dornan could be a good Bond.
Yeah,
interesting.
And I think he'd be able to play that sort of Bond we're looking for as well.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, right, I, yeah. I'm in total agreement. I think we've had a long time with the gritty Bond, and I've really enjoyed it. I love the Daniel Craig era, but I just need something. We just need something different. We can't continue down this path. As I keep saying, it's a thing. I keep saying is it the series painted itself into a corner. Mm. Yeah. There is nowhere else for it to go. You know, we've painted Moneypenny into the corner. We've got like an M that can shoot in the field. We've got. Daniel Craig's Bond died, you know, he had a baby, all this sort of stuff. It's like it's gone so far, there is no further for it to go in that direction.
Yeah,
so we need something different, and I think like something lighter, something more fun, something more family friendly. Bring back the gadgets. It doesn't have to be Die Another Day. You can make these films be fun, you can make them be fantastical, you can make them like You Only Live Twice. You know, you need something where the like youngsters want to see and want to be involved in, want to get involved with. And on that note, you know, someone lighter. I don't see Henry Cavill doing it.
No.
But I could see someone I've really come round to is Dan Stevens. I think he's got a lot of charm and charisma and presence. He can do the dangerous stuff as well. He's terrific in this program I just watched called Gaslit. He's so funny and charming in it that I just couldn't see him. I could see him as Bond quite easily. And then just someone like in the vein of like Tom Hiddleston, I think he could do a good job. And someone who maybe not quite as well known, but like Henry Golding, I think he would be a good light touch Bond as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's three choices from me, but I'm going to say Dan Stevens at this stage, but,
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I think I see it as being, it's not necessarily the Bond I want, but I think it's the Bond that the world needs at the moment.
Yeah, we need a Pierce Brosnan type, don't we?
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
Oh my, oh dear.
You're lucky I didn't say it.
Yeah, let's get Brosnan back then. Right, well, this has been a fun episode to do. We will be returning to normal service next week, and if... We'd love to hear your choices for who should be the next Bond. So you can email us on
podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
Yeah, tell us your favourite posters. Tell us your favourite third acts. Tell us the the action sequence that hasn't been done yet that you'd like to see. Just send it all in. We'd love to hear it all, and we'll read out the messages. And also, you can tweet us, send us them on whatever platform you're on. We're not on TikTok, so don't send them on there. But we're on everywhere else. And where can they find us, Brendan?
Is that how we promote ourselves now? It's just stuff we're not on.
Yeah.
We're not on TikTok. So Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, it's @JamesBondA to Z. And that's if you want to send more beef in for Wheatley because...
He's got something wrong.
You know, License to Kill. I mean, you're going to get some more heat for that.
I'll take it. I don't mind. I'm sticking with my guns.
Okay.
But yeah, as we haven't asked for a while, but if you can leave us a good review or rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, it helps other people to find the show. So we would really appreciate if you took the time to do that. If you like what you hear and you want other people to know about it, then that's a great way of doing it. Or just tell your friends and share the link online. That all really helps. Another way of supporting the show is on Ko-fi. We've got a page there, ko-fi.com/JamesBondA to Z, and you can buy us a coffee for £3, one-off payment, or you can do a recurring monthly coffee, and that all helps to keep the show going, keeps us in mint juleps and vodka martinis. And then finally, we've also got a t-shirt store as well if you want to buy that with some Creator Spring, and that is you'll be able to find the details on our show notes. So yes, let's wrap things up there, I guess, and just remains for me to say that the James Bond A to Z podcast will return next week.
Suppose I'll see you later then.
Ciao.
The James Bond A to Z podcast features Tom Butler, Brendan Duffy and Tom Wheatley. The podcast was produced by Tom Wheatley with music by Tom Ingemels and artwork supplied by Helen Dolly.
Dissolves all metals.
Wonderful for poison pen letters.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.